On Tuesday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced that the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, also known as DACA, would be phased out. Susie Pritchett is an associate professor and the director of the Family and Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wyoming College of Law. She spoke with Wyoming Public Radio's Maggie Mullen about how DACA came to be, its relevance to Wyoming, and what is now at stake for its recipients.
The enactment of DACA by President Obama was an interesting move because normally changes in immigration law happen at the congressional level and they happen through the normal legislative process. And in fact, we call DACA recipients dreamers because there was proposed legislation. For the past 16 years, there's been various legislative proposals that are working to give these children who came to the United States, usually with parents, usually through no fault of their own, unlawfully, some sort of permanent immigration status. And unfortunately, Congress just hasn't been able to come to an agreement on that. And so it wasn't necessarily a grant of immigration status, but it was a promise from the federal government and from Immigration and Customs Enforcement not to actively deport these dreamers during the time they have this DACA status, and then to allow them to obtain permission to work lawfully, which opens up so many other doorways in our country.
So who are these DACA recipients living in Wyoming?
It's really interesting. So I actually, just before I came in today, looked up the statistics, and there's about 600 individuals in Wyoming who have applied for and been granted DACA. So it's not a small number. And I've had the pleasure of getting to know some of these kids. We say kids, but a lot of them are young adults. They're students here at the university. They're graduate students. They're working in our state. They're, you know, part of our tourism industry. They're working in our oil and gas industry. They're students who are going to our public schools and benefiting from the amazing educational opportunities we have at the K-12 level here. And because our public schools at the K-12 level have a constitutional obligation to educate anyone, regardless of their immigration status, we're pouring loads of money into these kids to make sure they receive the finest education here in Wyoming. And they really are part of the fabric of our state.
As I understand it, a lot of dreamers didn't know they were unauthorized until they were teenagers when their documented peers started doing things that they weren't able to. Their peers were driving, they were getting after school jobs, they were applying for federal financial aid for college. One thing that you have written about that you say these immigrants have not been able to access is the Hathaway Scholarship here in Wyoming. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So the Hathaway Scholarship has a statute in our state statutes that applies directly to it and outlines the eligibility criteria for who can qualify for the Hathaway. And the statute clearly states that anybody who doesn't hold citizenship or lawful permanent resident status, which is synonymous with having a green card, is ineligible for the Hathaway. And so even students who now have the DACA status or are enrolled in this DACA program and have a good Social Security number, have work authorization, have a Wyoming state driver's license, graduated from Wyoming schools, they are ineligible for the generous Hathaway scholarship. And so from my interactions with a lot of DACA students here at the university, that's been a massive financial obstacle.
So it sounds like life without immigration status in the U.S. is just as much about missing out on some of these opportunities, but also it seems to be marked by this fear of deportation. Do you think these changes to DACA will heighten that effect?
I mean, it doesn't take a huge stretch of the imagination to put yourself in one of these kids' shoes, right? One day you're going to the university, you think you're working toward a four-year degree, you have a work permit, you have a part-time job that's allowing you to pay your tuition and go to school, and you're really taking steps toward the American dream. And the next thing you know, DACA is gone. And because these kids do not have any status, they are immediately deportable. And, you know, ICE could come to their door the day after DACA expires and knock on their door and take them in to ICE detention and put them in deportation proceedings.
So switching gears just a little bit, in 2012, when Obama enacted DACA, it was after Congress was not able to pass the DREAM Act. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has come out and said that that decision was unconstitutional. He called it, I believe, unlawful overreach. On the other hand, you have the American Civil Liberties Union saying that the decision by President Trump to abandon DACA was a political one and not a legal one. What do you make of all that?
There's so many interesting things going on that raise questions about what is the proper delegation of authority between Congress and the executive branch. This certainly was an executive action carried out by President Obama in the face of legislative inaction. And Attorney General Jeff Sessions says that the federal government cannot defend it. There's no constitutional basis or authority by which the president had to take that action to begin with. Interestingly, juxtaposed to that discussion is President Trump's travel ban, which came out shortly after his inauguration. That, too, was an executive action taken without congressional approval in the area of immigration. And it will be interesting to see in the days to come as these issues make their way through the courts whether or not there's a distinction between exercising prosecutorial discretion the way that President Obama did and working, you know, under different legislative provisions that give the president a wide latitude and amount of authority in the area of protecting national security, which was the justification for the travel ban. So I think those are issues that are not clear. They're certainly not clear, and the courts are going to be wrestling with them over the months and years to come.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today. Susie Pritchett is an associate professor with the College of Law at the University of Wyoming. She's also director of the Family and Immigrant Justice Clinic on campus.
Thanks for having me.